If he was to start to allow, controlled explosions, a controlled demolition within U.S. credit to take some of that froth out, the blowback on the stock market would be ugly. But if he was fairly certain he wasn't going to ignite systemic risk, I think that he would be willing to let more things break.
Welcome to Wealthion. I'm Wealthion founder Adam Taggart. You can make the argument that Fed policy was the largest single driver sending financial asset prices ever higher over the past 10 years. You can also make the case that the horrible performance of both stocks and bonds this year are due as well to the Fed reversing its easing policy and embarking on a tightening regime. All, mind you, to combat raging inflation, which can also be argued the Fed is primarily liable for. And with the Fed now hiking rates and kicking in quantitative tightening, right as GDP started shrinking in Q1 of this year, will it pop the bubbles in the financial, housing, and jobs markets, plunging us into recession? To find out, we have the good fortune of asking Danielle DiMartino Booth. Danielle is CEO and Chief Strategist for Quill Intelligence LLC and was a former advisor to the Federal Reserve Bank of Dallas. So she knows the Fed, as well as the people running it, very well. Danielle, it's wonderful to see you again. Thanks so much for joining us today.
It's great to be here. It's wonderful to be here today.
All right. Well, it's fun to see your face. We're talking a lot on Twitter these days, but it's always nice to do the face-to-face. Lots of questions for you, Danielle. Particularly want to get into the employment market as well as housing with you, of course, the Fed too. Before we do, though, let's just kick it up to the very high macro level. I'm going to ask the question I always ask you when you come on first. What is your current assessment of today's global economy and financial markets?
So I'm happy that you use the word global, because that's the prism through which I'm following the economy right now. It's easy enough to get sucked into a silo where you're just looking at Europe or you're just looking at China. But if you look at the interaction between the biggest economies in the world, and just for good measure, you kind of throw South Korea in there, which I use as a bellwether, we really are seeing major cross currents in that a lot of these economies are reopening after COVID. You're seeing some strength in services, but generally speaking, in the cyclically leading areas of the world, whether it's new orders declining for a second month in a row in Germany's manufacturing sector, or China being the closest thing that officials will concede to being in recession. And if you look at mobility data, it's pretty clear. It really is pretty clear that even though, whether they say Beijing is shut down or not, after all of the drama in Shanghai, it's pretty apparent that that economy is as close again to recession as we've ever seen it. That's having blowback effects in South Korea. We're talking about some of the largest exporting nations. Everything that we said we would never see 6 months ago, whether you're talking about supply chains or shipping costs, all of this is coming down as the US labor market is finally starting to slow. We've seen everything else in the US economy slow, but Chair Powell has been resolute in standing. He's like Tammy Wynette, I'm gonna stand by my man. He has been standing by the labor market, being the stalwart, the standout in terms of why the United States economy is not at risk of going into recession. We're seeing that begin to change.
All right. So great summary. If I can restate real quickly, if the global economy is a rocket, it's at the point where the thrusters are going and it's trying to get a little higher, but the rate of ascent's been slowing. And the big question right now is what's going to happen next? Is it going to start falling back to Earth? We're seeing a lot of potential recessionary challenges, like you said. But some of those thrusters are still firing. So we kind of have this cross current moment like you're talking about. But I think we're all glued to the screen trying to figure out if this rocket's going to achieve escape velocity or not. I'm going to take the under on that. So your point there about Powell and jobs. So when I listened to his press conference, when was it? 2-3 weeks ago? To me, my translation of what he said was the Fed is declaring a war on jobs. I don't know how many times he said, there's two openings for every job applicant. He really drilled home the fact that you know, we got to start cooling this off a bit.
Yep.
And you know, as you and I have been talking about on Twitter, you know, there's all of a sudden a lot of evidence here that the job market is very quickly cooling from arguably having been, you know, really red hot, at least the way that the Fed measures it. So you and I are going to go back and forth on Twitter. I'll put up a tweet here that I wrote in response to one of yours, but basically saying that I think that the great resignation is going to morph into the great unretirement / please may I have my job back movement way faster than anybody is imagining right now. Just a quote here, going back to Powell's presser, right after he gave it, Nicholas Colas, who is a economist for DataTrack, said, Chair Powell keeps mentioning the relationship between the high level of job openings and wage price / price inflation. He's not talking to investors. He's talking to corporate America. And his goal is to have companies essentially institute a hiring freeze and end the cycle of paying up for new hires. Well, since that was said a couple of weeks ago, I mean, we've seen in the news, you know, a number of big employers say, hey, we think we might have too many jobs right now. We might have too many open or too many employees. Amazon and Walmart, you know, when they both reported earnings, they were disappointing because they, in many ways, they said we just had too many employees. They were expensive and they weren't as productive as they could have been. So, you know, do you agree that we're beginning to sort of see, you know, quickening signs of trouble in the employment market here?
You know, I do. And I'm looking for these kind of code words, these signposts. So even as Jamie Dimon, for example, is announcing that, you know, JP Morgan is going to hire 1,300 new advisors. Well, guess what? JP Morgan hires 1,300 new advisors all the time. They're always looking for the highest producing brokers. It's just part of the job of always poaching the best talent when you're talking about gathering assets. But what Jamie Dimon said, what Snap said, what so many companies that are echoing one another are saying is we're going to be extremely diligent with our cost controls. Discipline, discipline, discipline. These are code words for anybody who's not productive. We're going to help them quickly find the door. And you know, when you look at the start and stop, the stutter step to getting back to the office and ending this work from home phenomena. I'll share an anecdote with you from my buddy, Ivy Zelman.
Who's wonderful, by the way.
She's absolutely fabulous. But they had a field trip to Austin and they were just getting a bunch of feedback from new home builders. And Austin, by the way, we're starting to see incentives grow to sell homes and tweeting about that. But she actually had a builder relay an anecdote that a buyer who was going to buy a much larger home a bit further out of Austin than he would have otherwise changed his mind and said, no, you know what? My employer is reassessing our work from home benefits, and I better not move this far out, and I better not buy more house than I can afford. So if that pendulum is going to swing back, if employers are going to use was this the entitled employee with all the attitude, who wouldn't come into the office, and you know, I didn't seem to get the same amount of productivity. If they're going to use that as a quick filter to be like, okay, whoever's here present physically, raise your hand. Okay, good. That's our first round of layoffs. Moving on. But if that's the case, there will be serious ripple effects throughout other areas of the economy that have benefited so much from the exodus to the exurbs,
right?
Whether you're talking about home sales, what you've put, you know, what you fill up homes with, car sales. Again, I expect given the compression of the current cycle, and that's what people don't appreciate. They're saying, okay, so we're seeing late cycle indicators. However, it's still going to take us 2 years to get into recession. I'm like, well, decide which it is. Either we've seen cycle compression and therefore we're going to go into recession quicker, or we're going to have 12 years of expansion, and then we can play by that old playbook. Make up your mind. So the hypocrisy out there right now is, you know, and making matters worse, not that you asked me about this, but the sell side is being glacially slow to take down its earnings estimates.
It's ridiculous.
Every time you get a company come out and lay a bomb, it's, oh my God, you know, Snap is trading down 30% in the after hours trading. And I'm like, that's because the analyst community is not preparing investors for really what's to come.
Right. And I think the last time I saw this stat, I think earnings for 2023 are still healthily above earnings for 2022, even though we're looking at all this sort of real-time demand destruction that we're seeing. And Powell is out there saying, my job is, the Fed's job is to bring down demand, right?
Well, so far, he's a pretty good general in the field.
Well, yeah. And so, you know, it's interesting. So you say hypocrisy. I'm going to go back to Powell's presser again, just for a second. So I think, and I want to get to this in more depth with you a little bit later in this conversation. I think Powell is doing what he's saying he's going to do. He's basically saying, look, we're chained to the wheel here, chained to the mast on demand destruction, and we're going to do whatever it takes. Now, we can debate if he really is going to or not, but I think for the time being, you know, he's going to follow through the Fed's going to follow through at its next couple of meetings and continuing to hike rates the way that they say they're going to. They're trying to bring demand down to tame inflation, right? But the hypocrisy comes in when in the same breath he says, the economy is very strong. And I don't have his exact words in front of me, but there was something like there's absolutely no vulnerability to recession at this point, right? And then week later, you have guys like Goldman Sachs chair Lloyd Blankfein saying the risk of recession is very, very high. And then you have former Fed vice chairs like Quarles and Clarita coming out and saying, hey, you know, we think this ends in recession. So, you know, I understand that Powell's job is to sort of be the economic cheerleader. He's the flight attendant on the plane telling everybody, don't worry about the turbulence, everything's going to be fine. But that hypocrisy, just every time he has to step into that role, really does smack me in the face.
It does, but he did change his tone after getting confirmed.
Yeah, well, okay, so let's fast forward to this question then. So I've long wondered, why the heck would anybody want to re-sign up for this job, knowing what's coming, right? And he's a smart guy. He knows, you know, the lay of the land here. And the only real reason I can come up with, but I'm not nearly as close to the Fed as you are, obviously, Danielle, the only thing I can come up with is he is playing for legacy. And he's just saying, you know what, I don't want to be a one-termer who's kind of blamed by history as the guy that, you know, sort of set up this economy to just have the wheels come off. I want to be known more as a Volcker, where, you know, I did what needed to be done to fix a lot of the problems that the Fed created. That's the only thing I can think of here. Do you share that opinion, or do you have a different view?
I think that people forget about Powell's political underpinnings and the fact that he is conservative. He is a Republican. And I don't think he likes the idea of Fed policy being hijacked to be a conduit for modern monetary theory, universal basic income, whatever you want to call it, which created this inflation, by the way, was taking that all out for a test drive with three massive stimulus packages. I think that he's aware of the fact that if we're theoretically at Neil Howe's fourth turning or at that precipice, then the role that the Fed plays can be either completely marginalized if the Fed is effectively absorbed as a division of the Treasury Department to do its bidding, or the Fed can separate itself completely. And the Fed can use the opportunity of a crisis, use the opportunity of a longer recession than what we've grown accustomed to, when Powell or whoever his predecessors were didn't come riding to the rescue, to impose the central clearing of treasuries. And if you do that, we don't have enough time to get through it, but if he does that, if he takes that power out of the hands of the biggest US banks, and he shifts it to where, like any stock, everything's centrally cleared, then you're giving new lifeblood to the world's risk-free asset. Now, in order to make something like this happen, you got to have a crisis. And again, I think that the Game of Thrones that played out inside the Eccles building, how ugly it got with the battle for the leadership, the fact that the administration didn't do anything to be an arbiter, but rather actually they threw fuel on the fire, actually. They tried to keep the controversy alive. They kept uncertainty alive to the extent that Quarles came out recently and said, you know, had we not been paralyzed by the war going on inside the walls, we would have moved much more quickly.
Interesting.
In terms of tackling transitory. So
interesting. Sorry to interrupt that, but that's such an important point, because the Fed has been roundly criticized for not acting a lot sooner. And you're saying Quarles has sort of showing a peek behind the curtain saying, we were so dysfunctional, that's why we didn't move.
I wrote this months ago. People thought I was nuts. And I'm like, there's nothing happening if the staff is split down the middle trying to figure out who the boss is going to be.
All right, right. And to your credit, I mean, I remember interviewing you back in like September, October of last year, and you using the term Game of Thrones to describe what was going on back then. So clearly spot on.
Blind all squirrel, right. You know, blind squirrel.
Not at all. Not at all. All right. Well, look, so, that's really interesting. So I'm going to ask a question I was going to build up to you later on, but I'll throw it now since you've opened the door here. A lot of people still think, you know what, the Fed is a paper tiger, got a glass jaw, whatever analogy you want to use. And as soon as it really begins to get a little uncomfortable, Powell's going to pivot just like he did back in 2018. My question for you is, I'm not sure about that. I'm open to any possibility, but hearing what you're saying there, at least about what could be his grand plan here, do you think he's more willing to sacrifice the market to bring inflation under control than he's being giving credit for right now?
I think he's willing to sacrifice a big chunk of the stock market. And I think he's willing to let individual companies go in terms of credit. What I know he won't do, and what I think he was concerned about in 2018 was the very real prospect then of systemic risk. And back at the time, you know, people forget we had Japanese regulators that were leaning on big banks in Japan saying, why do you have these massively concentrated holdings of U.S. collateralized loan obligations? Mm-hmm. Well, and they'd be like, well, because Kuroda's kept rates at negative levels, so we do anything we can for yield. But the right. concentrated positions were such that at the time there was real concern that, you know, if something went wrong in U.S. credit, what could the contagion effect be? Could this be a Lehman moment? I'm not so sure that 2 years later, we haven't answered some of those questions and that we don't know a little bit better where the risk lies in the global financial system, such that Powell is able to let individual companies that need to be downgraded from investment grade to fallen angels. I mean, your average investment grade bond right now is trading at 80 cents on the dollar. Does that sound investment grade to you?
Right.
Clearly, there's some junk hiding in there. But if Powell's willing to let this happen, and if verbiage was written into the legislation by Senator Pat Toomey that dictates Janet Yellen does not have the legal authority to turn those credit switches back on without a new, unusual, and exigent circumstance, which is written into the law, so he can't just say, oh, we'll just flip back on LQD and HYG and backstop all the triple Bs. He doesn't have that legal authority. But if he was to start to allow, you know, controlled explosions, a controlled demolition within U.S. credit to take some of that froth out, the blowback on the stock market would be ugly. But if he was fairly certain he wasn't going to ignite systemic risk, I think that he would be willing to let more things break.
Oh, that's really fascinating. So back in 2008, right, the fear was the banking system ceasing to function, mm-hmm. right? So that's a systemic risk. You know, you can right. you don't have to like it, but you can kind of understand the logic of, hey, we got to step in and make sure that just things work tomorrow, right?
Right.
Sort of two questions for you, but they're related, so I'll kind of ask them together and let you go.
And believe it or not, Adam, I have two large basset hounds that are baying in the background.
Okay. I can't hear them, so that's fine. Don't worry about
it. Good. I'm happy you can't hear them.
They're not nearly as loud as Lance Roberts' dogs, and I talk to him every week.
Love it.
They say the banking system is much better collateralized and all that stuff. Yep. So it's not at risk. And if you disagree, let me know. But if we take that as an assumption, then where is the risk here? Where's the biggest risk here when you talk about a Lehman moment? So that's sort of question number one. And then question number two is like, and it's really fascinating when you said that Powell might be willing to really kind of let creative destruction, you know, run its course. You called it controlled demolition. And honestly, I mean, this would be painful and bad for a number of players and people in the short term, but it's kind of the tough medicine we need to get to a more sustainable system. Mm-hmm. you know, is there a danger on the corporate side of things where you begin to have this, you know, cascading domino effect as you know, cost of capital gets high enough, whatever, and we get into a bad enough recession, demand goes down, plus cost of capital goes up, and all these zombie combinations, zombie corporations just start going down like dominoes. Could that get to a point where we have some sort of out of control conflagration, or is that just what's needed? So I know I threw a lot at you there. Answer any way you like.
So I think what we'll be watching very closely, given the fact that, for example, HYG, the price of HYG is not down near as much as the outflows would suggest. And that means that underlying these exchange traded fund structures, they've been liquidating to satisfy redemptions, the good stuff. So to me, one of the biggest risks out there is what happens if they're forced to sell the bad stuff that's not trading or trading by appointment only. And what would the implications be for other exchange traded funds? Would you see contagion in that space? If there was a panic with people who've been operating under the auspices all these years of instantaneous liquidity, and all of a sudden you're not able to raise those funds. That's one. Two is the shadow banking system. And you know, we talk about the Blackstones and the Apollos and the Carlyle groups, you know, that J. Powell used to run the industrial sector of the Carlyle. We talk about it kind of in a third, you know, kind of a, as if it doesn't apply. We talk about those trillions and trillions and trillions of dollars of dry powder and the trillions and trillions and trillions of dollars that they've got under management as if it's this cute little niche in the financial system, whereas it's enormous and unregulated, completely unregulated. And if you talk about, because Bostic, for example, brought up the fact that maybe we'll pause in September. I just had a great meeting with a discussion.
I saw that trial balloon.
Well, yes. But that being said, you know, I interviewed Thomas Honig for almost an hour recently. And basically what he said at the time was, I was dissenting over and over again because I wanted for us to put policy out there and then pause and then put more policy out and then pause. I didn't want it to have it be as measured as it was because monetary policy acts with a lag, which is true. I bring this up because I'm answering your question in a very roundabout way, Adam. What if they do pause on rate hikes, which kind of speaks to your cost of capital, but yet they keep quantitative tightening going on because it's something that's supposed to occur in the background. Now, if they keep the QT machine running, that will allow a continued controlled demolition, because the zombie corporations rely on unfettered liquidity, right? Not the cost of capital. They rely on the capital markets being open for business. There's a nuance, but I think that the greater risk to the markets is not necessarily continued rate hikes, but rather the effects of quantitative tightening, if it gets fully up and running, which by the way, is not until Labor Day in the United States. There's just to stage it in, start June 1, 2nd, 3rd, July 1, 3rd, 3rd, August 1, until they get to that ramp up to that $95 billion a month run rate by Labor Day. If we get there and they decide to pause for the September FOMC, but keep quantitative tightening going on in the background, you're going to test HYG, you're going to test exchange traded funds where the collateral underlying them is questionable, illiquid. You're going to test the shadow banking system. You're going to test private equity.
All right. Well, it's really interesting. It's going to be really interesting to see what happens here. So we're speculating, obviously, but I want to make a distinction for viewers here. While people conflate them a lot, and it's been easy to over the past 10 years, there's a difference between the economy and the financial markets, right? You need the economy to function for the world to work. In the financial markets, it's investors, right? And so, you know, if investors get hurt by some of the things you're talking about, Danielle, yeah, I mean, a lot of people are going to feel pain, but a lot of people might look at that and say, well, they took a risk, you know, they shouldn't have, or they were over leveraged or overstretched or whatever, right? I mean, in other words, the world doesn't end if the investing class of the world, you know, loses money based upon what you're talking about. Now, there are knock-on effects. You know, companies can't get financing, they go out of business, they lay people off, et cetera, et cetera. But the world still functions to a certain extent. That's why I was sort of talking about
it. It regenerates itself. It's able to regenerate itself.
Well, it's supposed to, right? I mean, the markets, the word market's in there. It's supposed to be creative destruction where the better players take out the weak and inefficient, right? And we've stopped that because of all of the intervention from the central planners really over the past, 20 plus decades. Sure. I don't mean to make light of the pain that this would create if Powell is playing the game that you just sort of described here. But a big part of me roots for it because, I've long said the sooner we take our medicine and, we clear out the malinvestment, the better we can get back to a sustainable, more sustainable baseline that works better for everybody. Now, I'm not trying to put words in your mouth and saying that this is what you're saying Powell is doing, but it seems to me that the possibility of it is growing.
I think that the probability is growing. I think that because he was finally confirmed that we've crossed that little Rubicon, he was technically out of office for more than 3 months. And I think that he is up to his eyeballs in being a political pawn. I think Trump took him out to the woodshed. And I think that once he got to the woodshed, that Biden started with Chinese water.
Pressuring like crazy, exactly, yeah.
Well, between, is it going to be Brainerd or you? Or Brainerd or you? Yeah. Let's just see. I'm teasing you. And what do you mean you don't want climate change on the Federal Reserve Board? We'll bring in Kamala Harris to break the vote. It's just been a complete and total you-know-what show.
Yeah.
But now he's in the position, and he has veto power. So what if after all of this, he's fed up with politicians trying to pull his strings, and come September, he's like, fine, we can pause. There are several of the doves who want to pause, but I'm going to keep my quantitative tightening going because I don't want to appear going into a midterm election like I'm trying to swing this for anybody.
Right, right. Okay. So I get that. And that was sort of meant earlier by Powell maybe now playing for legacy now that he's got the renomination and, he can do what he's going to do. I guess one question a lot of viewers are probably have, I'll just ask you here, which is, so maybe he cares less about the politicians at this point, right? Maybe he's going to do what he's going to do for posterity, but the Fed is still an organization made up by banks. And if all of a sudden he starts taking out the zombie companies, and whatnot, obviously a lot of asset valuation is going to vaporize, right? Which in many ways will hurt the banks because they're heavily invested and their clients are. What would your answer to that be? Some people are going to say he'll never do that because he'll never kowtow to the banks. The banks just always want more,
I would say watch out come February when you've got a new Congress in, because both parties will kowtow and placate whoever's buttering their bread. And by the time the new Congress is sworn in, I can guarantee you that there's going to be whispers in the ears about the 2024 presidential election. And how do you want that to turn out? Well, you better rein in your boy Powell. You better do something to make him stop this war on everything that matters to us, as in we like to have five homes. And we like the wealth effect to only work for the wealthy. And this is the way that we have come to know life as we know it for the last 40 years, or at least since Volcker left office. So we never asked for the second coming of Volcker. So it was a Republican president who signed socialism into law. People don't like that inconvenient truth. But if people are like, yeah, once we get Republicans in, if they're controlling the Senate and the House, then we're going to have a really strong Fed. And I'm like, I wouldn't bet the farm on that. I just wouldn't. Because politicians do all kinds of things to make sure that they get their contributions, which is why I've got hashtag term limit to me, because he's the one person who we're not going to see come February. And one of the biggest governors on Fed actions is not going to be in Congress anymore. And he has been a fabulous influence, whether it was Sarah Bloom Raskin or getting those credit facilities turned off. He has been a staunch advocate of speaking for the American people as opposed to the American banks. So we'll see.
All right. So let me ask a question about something that may not be super well understood. So one of the big contributors to the inflation that we're fighting right now was the fiscal stimulus mm-hmm. that was being done in parallel to the monetary stimulus. And we had a decade of monetary stimulus and didn't really get a bunch of, you know, real world price inflation out of it. We got a lot of asset price inflation out of it, financial asset price. Sure. But we didn't get a lot of kind of goods inflation, but we did once we started the fiscal stimulus, you know, directly push that money out into the world.
Yep.
And of course we had the supply chain breakages that, you know, made things even worse here. But
in other words, Bezos was right.
Yeah. So my question is let's say Powell says I'm going on the quantitative tightening route. You know, don't care what anybody else says. I'm going to all of a sudden, you know, be the guy taking away the punch bowl. And let's say we go into a recession. You know, we have pain out there in consumer land. Maybe the Biden administration really wants to boost its chances of doing better in November or whatever. And Congress wants to do more financial or more fiscal stimulus. That is really funded by the Fed, right?
It has been. All those trillions you mentioned just now were monetized by the Fed.
Right. So can Powell kind of stymie that? Can he keep them from doing that? Because basically saying, I'm not going to buy your treasuries. I'm not going to give you the proceeds by which to go do that.
Well, I mean, Powell could theoretically continue with quantitative tightening, requiring other buyers to step up at auction.
Right. But they're going to have to replace the biggest buyer in the past.
Right? Oh, yeah. Those are big shoes to fill. I mean, right. Those are mighty big shoes. And they might actually require a decent coupon on a treasury.
Exactly. Substantially higher yields. Exactly.
I mean, look, it's with good reason that Janet Yellen right now is breathing a sigh of relief as yields begin to tick down, that tax receipts went through the moon because she's got more money in the Treasury General account and Uncle Sam's checking account than she knows what to do right now. So at least she's not out in the marketplace right now. It's Treasury Secretary's worst nightmare is to have to go to auction without artificially low interest rates.
Yep. Yeah. All right. Fascinating. All right. Well, look, I got a couple other questions I want to get to. So
sure.
I want to go back to where we started here. We're sort of talking about, you know, the labor market and the path to recession here. All right. So some stats, 146 of 147 industries tracked by Revelo declined in new job postings, in April, a massive spike in April.
Yep.
Challenger job cuts increased by 6% year over year in April. This was the first annual increase in 15 months. Mm-hmm. And then here's a chart I was mentioning to you before we turned on the cameras here. You know, I've talked about the great unretirement movement starting here. The latest data from Indeed shows that 3.3% of the workers who retired a year ago are once again employed. So this is showing that, you know, people who said, all right, I'm done. You know, my stock portfolio is doing great. I'm going to retire earlier. I'm heading to the beach are now, you know, beginning to have to sort of slink back into the workforce saying, maybe I was a little bit premature there.
Of course.
Know you have some stats as well on the other end of the spectrum.
So it's interesting. I understand that jobless claims remain near historic lows, but starting points matter. And from a base of about 166,000 March the 19th, we've seen jobless claims tick up 31%. That's a real number. And on top of that, if you look at the broader flows, and this is with a hat tip to simplifies Mike Green, who was also quoting Connor Sen, but the number of US employees segueing from the labor force into unemployed, going from employed to unemployed, it was higher than the number of Americans who went from coming off the sidelines being unemployed to becoming employed in the latest month's data. Now, that typically only happens, that inflection point typically only happens during recession. And on top of that, we saw Indeed.com's job postings peak in January. And we have since, they're still up year over year, but we have since seen them steadily tick down. One more thing, if you look inside the JOLTS data, which Powell loves to quote, two job openings for every blah, blah, I got it. Why don't you pit the hires rate against the job openings rate? And then you see that companies have been inflating the number of job openings that they actually have, the same way that companies have been over ordering to get their hands on corrugated or whatever it is that they thought they were going to run out of, so that they were overbuying. In that same way, they were overbuying labor. And now we're seeing the flip side of that, beginning with Amazon, but continuing on through one company after another as we get through this earnings season.
Yeah, it's crazy. So a couple other indicators. One, I'm going to put up a chart here of tech startup layoffs. And these aren't just all tiny little companies. A lot of these are pretty big tech names that you'd know that are included in the data here. But you'll see here that, you know, it was ferociously high during the 2020, you know, global shutdown, pretty much died out for 2 years, and then is now roaring back with a vengeance. And the latest month, May here, is back up at the same levels now that we were in March and April of 2020. And we still have a week to go left in the month, right? So that number is going to go up even higher just for May alone.
Yeah, it looks like an upside down bell curve.
Yeah, absolutely. So we're seeing in real time that layoffs are coming back. And then I read, you know, the Snap, you know, debacle earnings summary from last night. You know, the article I read was basically talking about how, you know, Snap is now one of many, you know, social media companies, but basically online digital media companies that are seeing that are reducing their forecasts for online advertising revenues. And I worked for 10 years at Yahoo, and I know that world really well. And advertising budgets are the first thing to go when a recession's approaching.
Yep, right? True.
So it's a very dependable bellwether of impending recession. So, you know, we're kind of going here, you and I are both seeing lots and lots of storm clouds that we've seen before, that we say these are really dependable predictors of recession. So
I mean, another upside down bell curve is if you look at the amount of distressed debt entering the system, and distressed debt is trading at 80 cents on the dollar or lower, or 1,000 points or more higher than treasuries. It looked like it troughed, and it's come roaring back in April and May. And again, these are companies at risk of default.
Okay, yeah. So hopefully folks listening are saying, okay, Adam and Daniel, we got it. Like, really high odds that a recession is coming.
Beating us up with data.
Yeah. And the reason where I'm going with this is to a discussion you and I have been having on Twitter that I want to make sure we get in people's minds here, which is the progression of this on the job side, because most people watching, if you're not retired and you have a job, is hiring freeze, hours cut, and then layoffs, right? So even though we're giving you all this data, you're probably looking around and not hearing too many stories yet of people you know getting laid off, but you may be hearing stories of, oh yeah, you know, this company, you know, pulled the job openings that it had, and it's just not hiring right now, right? You're already beginning to hear in certain industries that people are getting their hours cut, right? They're not getting fired yet. They're just not getting as many hours as they want, right? And just understand that is the progression, right? You don't go from, you know, we think we're going to have a recession, everybody getting laid off tomorrow. It is a dependable, you know, progression here, and we are making our way upon it here. So I see you nodding. I'll let you give
just remember that if you do see the unemployment rate rise for three consecutive months, you're in recession. You're not pondering recession. You're knee deep in it.
And
we have seen after month of upward revisions to non-farm payrolls, we've seen not one, but 2 months in a row of downward revisions to non-farm payrolls. I mean, these are your signposts. I look at what you're describing and as one wave coming on shore after another. Well, the first wave that's come on shore, you can look at through two different prisms. You can look at it through the earnings releases of companies saying we're imposing a hiring freeze, or you can look at it through a separate prism of individual Federal Reserve surveys coming out that gauge future work week. And those are crashing. Whether you're looking at Empire State, the Philly Fed, 6 months out, they're saying, we're not going to need our workers working as many hours. We're going to have whittled down our backlogs, and we don't see demand coming behind it enough.
All right. So to build on your analogy, we're seeing wave after wave of evidence here, right? I would say every wave is coming a bit higher up on the shore. So the question I want viewers to be asking themselves is, hey, if the tidal wave of recession, you know, crests the seawall and comes over and starts flooding things, what can I do today to make myself less vulnerable. I do have a piece I wrote years ago that I'm putting up now here on Wealthion. It's called the Layoff Survival Guide. If you want to read it, just go to wealthion.com/layoffs. It has a whole bunch of examples of things that you could start doing today if you think that your, you know, position may be at risk. But I'm curious, Danielle, do you have any other sort of just bits of general advice to give to the average person who, you know, says, oh, if there's a potential I might be out of work in a year, what are some things I could be doing right now?
Well, I would certainly be looking at the fine print of your 401k if that applies, and seeing if you can't get more control over the assets in your 401k so you're not kind of forced to stay exposed to whatever it is that you're in. So I would be looking for that. I would be looking for how your 401k could convert into an IRA if you were to be changing positions. And the flip side of it is, this is not the time to be engaged in, you know what, I won the last bidding war. That's my claim to fame. I was the last guy to win a bidding war to buy a house. This is the worst time to be bringing on debt. And it's an easy enough, you know, but summer vacation's coming up and I get it. But right now is the time to be examining what your cash cushion is, and making sure that you're not taking on more debt at the same time. So again, as the lower rates go, the more you need to look to adding to individual municipal bonds in your portfolio. Huge advocate, and they've been through the slaughter, just like any other fixed income instrument. And there are great states. Look at the United States of America and go to the left of Illinois. There are some great states out there to buy. But look to add to things that are going to benefit you going forward. I think a client showed me a few days ago that the after tax and before tax yields of 10 years and munis had met one another. That makes no sense as long as you pay taxes. Wow. So there are other places that you can hide right now where you can get great value.
All right, great. Okay. All right. Well, look, let's move on from that topic to another topic that's been near and dear to our hearts recently, which is the housing market. Mm-hmm. So a couple quick stats here. You know, mortgage rates have been spiking. This interview with Danielle will continue over in part two, which will be released on this channel tomorrow as soon as we're finished editing it. To be notified when it comes out, subscribe to this channel if you haven't already by clicking on the subscribe button below, as well as the little bell icon right next to it. And be sure to hit the like button too while you're down there. And don't forget to go read our free layoff survival guide over at wealthion.com/layoffs. Be sure you start taking the steps you're able to now to reduce your vulnerability to the job losses a recession can bring. And last, if the darkening market outlook Danielle has detailed in this interview has you feeling a little vulnerable about the prospects for your wealth, then consider scheduling a free, no strings attached portfolio review by a financial advisor who can help manage your wealth, keeping in mind the trends and risks that Danielle has mentioned here. Just go to wealthion.com and we'll help set one up for you. Okay, I'll see you next over in part two of our video interview with Danielle DiMartino Booth.